This is Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for September 8th, 2011. Today we look at the epic environmental action in D.C. against the expansion of the tar sands oil industry through the Keystone XL pipeline, and look at how the reversal of the Trailbreaker pipeline in Maine is poised to bring tar sands oil from Canada into Portland for shipping. Much has been written about the aggressive environmental and health impacts of tar sands production in Alberta, Canada. A 2009 study by the Alberta Cancer Board showed a 30% increase in cancer rates in the First Nation community of Fort Chipewyan, including leukemias and lymphomas, which have been linked to exposure to petroleum products, VOCs, and other hydrocarbons. Tar sands oil production emits three times higher the carbon emissions of conventional oil production. Now the Canadian oil and gas company TransCanada is pursuing the approval of a second pipeline to pump tar sands oil to U.S. markets. The Keystone XL pipeline would run 2,000 miles across six states, pumping 900,000 barrels a day of tar sands crude to Texas to be refined. It would cross many major rivers, including the Missouri, Yellowstone and Red Rivers, and the Ogallala Aquifer in Nebraska. The project is pending approval of the U.S. State Department. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, however, has come out against the State Department's review of the pipeline, calling it quote-unquote environmentally objectionable, and criticizes the State Department for providing insufficient information. The EPA cites the need for the consideration for alternative routes, disclosure of data on the chemicals in the oil and in dilutants, and accounting for the harm to communities near the pipeline and refineries, impacts on water resources, and an analysis regarding the increased impacts of tar sands oil extraction and refining on climate change. For 2 weeks at the end of August and the beginning of September, thousands converged on the White House in what is being observed as the largest environmental civil disobedience action since 1977. 1,252 people were arrested opposing the tar sands Keystone XL pipeline and the climate change that would be exacerbated by further use of tar sand oil. The U.S. State Department is holding public hearings and has the power over the project's progress. This week, we talk again with a guest who attended the D.C. action and with a member of a Maine environmental organization about Maine's ties to tar sands. So we're speaking with Melina Labakan-Massimo, the climate and energy campaigner for Greenpeace Canada in Alberta and a member of the Lubicon Cree from northern Alberta, an area affected by the tar sands oil extraction. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So we spoke with you the week before the two-week civil disobedience action that just occurred in D.C. in front of the White House. Over 1,200 people were arrested in an action bringing attention to the tar sands oil extraction in Alberta, the Keystone XL pipeline that would stretch across the United States down to Texas, and about climate change and the impacts of tar sands oil extraction on that. Now, after this action, tell us about what happened over these 2 weeks, what went on, and what impacts you felt it has made so far.
Well, what we saw was, like you said, over 1,200 people, getting arrested, coming to the White House to display their opposition against the Keystone XL pipeline and urging Obama to not approve the presidential permit that he needs to approve in this coming year. So it was quite amazing to see, people willing to do this action, to get arrested. And it was people from all walks of life. So we saw people from, Indigenous folks from the north in Canada that are directly impacted by the tar sands project, as well as, farmers and community members that are impacted from the Keystone XL pipeline corridor, to people that are concerned about the impacts that oil derived by the tar sands will cause, in regards to climate change and the issues that it will just only exacerbate. So we've seen all of these amazing people come together to really come in one voice and say, this is a problem, this needs to stop.
Talk about what an average day was there over this 2 weeks. People gathered in front of the White House and arrests occurred each day?
Yeah, exactly. So what would happen is that people would gather and they would line up into two lines, and they would go, in front of the gate of the White House and basically stand, in unison together. And at that point, then the cops would cordon off the area and give people, you know, up to three warnings that if they didn't want to get arrested, they would need to leave that area. And so people that, you know, refused to leave the area were basically arrested and, you know, detained and taken in and then released the same day most of the time. But so it was one of the largest civil disobedient actions, you know, since 1977, as most people are saying. So, you know, quite a large, you know, hundreds of people every day getting arrested.
And as we've said, James Hansen, the NASA climate scientist, who's been quite vocal on climate change, was one of them among a number of other names people might recognize and names people obviously wouldn't recognize. There was over 1,200 people there. And obviously, then there would be a lot of organizing discussion about next steps and building of a movement, I would guess. Can you talk about that aspect?
Well, what we're starting to see is that, you know, previously the tar sands wasn't a known issue, even though it's one of the biggest industrial projects on the face of the planet and, you know, in human history. And so, you know, we're talking about something that was somewhat, you know, a pink elephant in the room. You know, people weren't talking about how this oil that's derived from the tar sands, you know, produces more greenhouse gas emissions, causes more, deforestation, habitat destruction, and is also violating the treaty and indigenous rights of the people that live there. This wasn't becoming an issue. And now that, you know, we've seen these protests outside of the Keystone XL, the tar sands, as well as, you know, the infrastructure associated to the tar sands, like the Keystone XL, are becoming an issue because people are seeing it connected to, you know, a bigger issue of what the world is doing in regards to climate change and the fact that Canada and the U.S., one of the two, you know, wealthiest countries in the world, with the ability to make that paradigm shift away from fossil fuel development into, you know, clean, renewable energies economies, is something that is possible, but because we have a lack of political will, a lot of times we don't see this happening, and a lot of times the corporations are making the judgment calls for, you know, what will, you know, become of humanity and what will happen in the future. So I think what we're starting to see is a greater movement, especially from North America, you know, of people saying, like, this needs to stop. You know, we cannot continue to produce climate change, with the fossil fuel development that's happening in North America, which is basically, you know, exporting climate change to other parts of the world that are already being, you know, feeling the impacts of climate change. Like, we're seeing over 300,000 people every year die of climate change. We're already seeing climate refugees being made, you know, millions of people every year having to move and relocate because of climate change. And, you know, this is a major issue worldwide. And so what we're hoping is that the next, you know, phase of this will continue to push for that change.
And there were, as you said, First Nations and U.S. tribes represented there and were also arrested. Is that right?
Yes. There was people from the tar sands that were arrested. There was American Indian tribes were arrested that will be along the corridor of the Keystone XL. So we've seen Indigenous folks from both ends becoming arrested. You know, there was also a Gulf Coast contingent of folks there the week earlier that were arrested and that came for the action. So we're seeing people from all walks of life taking action.
Again, there are people across the country concerned with the actual pipeline itself and its safety and whether or not it may affect the Ogallala Aquifer and other water sources. People who are concerned about the end of the pipeline and the refining practices that would take place there, as well as the fact that by using this pipeline, it would increase production at the tar sands. And I'll have you talk a little bit about that increased production probability. I also mentioned our other guest today is speaking about a pipeline called Trailbreaker Pipeline, which would actually pump oil from Canada down to Portland, Maine, would reverse the pipeline so that it could now take tar sands bitumen and bring it down to be exported out of Portland. So that's a whole other aspect. Can you talk about how the increased pipelines and increased dependence on tar sands would further impact the region where you're from in northern Alberta?
Yes, what we're seeing is that there is already serious environmental concerns relating to water and the water levels, the contamination into the air, into the land, and then also the deforestation of the boreal forest. We're already seeing massive amounts of destruction to the northern part of Alberta. And, you know, we're, you know, currently producing over 1.4 million barrels a day, and they're hoping to increase this production to about 3.5, or 3 by 2020. So the fact that we're already seeing these serious issues and serious health-related issues associated with this type of contamination that's, you know, leaching into the watershed, this is not what we need to see. If we're seeing more pipelines being developed to export tar sands, that means that at the source of the problem, you know, it's only set to grow. It's only these problems that we're already seeing are already going to be exacerbated even more. And so I think, you know, with these types of infrastructure projects, you know, and the opposition with them, it just shows that we don't need this type of development, and we can't, basically the land in Alberta can't support this type of development either because of what we're already seeing, you know, just at 1.4 million barrels a day.
And I know you spoke about this before, but when we talk about the land, we're also talking about impacts on human health. And you had spoken a little bit about that, particularly the impacts on the Indigenous people in that area.
Yeah, there's serious health issues, even from, you know, what we call Upgrader Alley, or the refinery area where outside of Fort Saskatchewan, we see, you know, certain farmers having to sell their land so refineries can move in and not wanting to produce around that area, as well as up in, you know, downstream of the tar sands where we see communities like Fort Chipewyan that, you know, have already increased levels of cancers and seen certain kinds that are, you know, related to environmental contamination like bile duct cancer. There's these issues that we're already seeing surfacing in communities that shouldn't be already having these elevated rates of cancer. So it's very much a concern, and it just, you know, the fact that, the governments that be and the corporations are obviously, it seems like, a lot more concerned about the profit and about, you know, continuing to have, you know, dirty fossil fuel development and not, you know, the true, real investment that we need to be seeing now in renewable energy technologies and that infrastructure that is needed to develop those so we can exist in that, you know, with healthier communities, safer jobs, and healthier, happier people, hopefully, at the end of the day.
And finally, can you talk about this Keystone XL pipeline 2-week demonstration? Over 1,200 arrested in civil disobedience is obviously more than just about the pipeline. It's about the tar sands impact in Alberta. And as we said, part of this huger movement to bring attention to climate change and the need to address it, particularly in the United States, where it's still considered that it's a debate about whether it's happening. Can you talk about this action, this 2-week action, in the context of a larger movement and where you feel from being there in D.C. It's going from here?
What we do hope to see is that more and more people will start to, you know, acknowledge the fact that climate change is the issue really of our time. And, you know, what we do now is really going to define and determine how, you know, not only we're going to live, but how our children's future is going to look like. And I think people are starting to realize that, and the fact that, you know, over 1,200 people are willing to get arrested because they know that, you know, the lack of foresight that we see in governments and corporations, you know, playing out the future of humanity is really, you know, what's at stake here. And so what we'll be seeing, hopefully, in the future is more people, you know, coming on board, whether they, you know, from all walks of life. And you know, we're seeing even, you know, people that are famous and well-known to kind of lend their name to the issue. And, you know, I think there's a variety of different people that are very seriously secure. And so, you know, in the future, what we'll be seeing on October 7th is that's the last day of the public hearings in Washington, D.C., so there's probably going to be another rally or, you know, another event taking place. But what we'll also be seeing on the Canadian side is on September 26th, in Ottawa, outside of the Parliament, people also will be doing, you know, mirroring a similar type of event where people will be getting arrested as well and, you know, lending their voices and support to and putting pressure on the Harper government to not continue to allow, you know, unabated tar sands development and, you know, the associated infrastructure like the Keystone XL pipeline.
Melina Labakan-Massimo, climate energy campaigner for Greenpeace Canada and Alberta and member of the Lubicon Cree from Northern Alberta, the area affected by the tar sands oil extraction. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We now turn to Dylan Voorhees. He's the Clean Energy Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine. His organization and four other U.S. and Canadian environmental organizations are pressing Canada's Energy Regulatory Board to reject the request by oil and gas giant Enbridge Incorporated to gain a special exemption to reverse the flow of the Trailbreaker pipeline. Over 1,200 people were arrested in front of the White House in a two-week direct action recently to oppose the Keystone XL pipeline, which would increase the production of tar sands oil in Alberta, Canada. But here in Maine, we are even more directly connected than that with the Trailbreaker pipeline. And so we have Dylan Voorhees with us today to talk about that pipeline and explain how Portland, Maine could become the main point for tar sands oil on the East Coast. Welcome to the program and go right ahead.
Thanks. Indeed, you've set it up, the larger battle that's going on over our future use of oil in the United States, and really is a monumental struggle where some are seeking to increase our dependence on oil, and in fact, one of the dirtiest sorts of crude oil available, and we can talk about that.
Yes.
And to try and lock in our dependence on it for decades by building these various pipelines in across Canada and into the United States, in the Midwest, in the case of the Keystone Project, and potentially right here through Maine for the Trailbreaker Project. And on the other side, you know, are those who have been saying for a long time that it really is time to shift to cleaner sources of energy. So the larger context is a big struggle that lots of money is being spent by the oil industry to have these pipeline projects approved, and it's very exciting that that folks have come out and put themselves right on the line in being arrested in what has been described as the largest environmental civil disobedience act in this country. Certainly in decades.
And like you were saying, this, and just to skip back for a second, that this is not only about a particular pipeline, but this is about climate change and the future of the planet in that regard, as well as the very real local repercussions of these projects.
Absolutely. It's got both. NASA climate scientist James Hansen, who's one of the country's foremost climate scientists, has said that if we really tap into these dirty tar sands in Alberta and really start to deplete them and burn them, and that are so polluting of carbon, that it's essentially game over for climate change mitigation and reduction. Those his words, game over. So there is a vast quantity of carbon in the ground in Alberta in these tar sands, and it is very polluting and carbon intensive to get it out and ship it. And so that's really the big question: is this the direction that we're going to go in? And beyond the climate issues, this extraction in Canada is incredibly destructive, and both to people there as well as boreal forests, and putting lots of pollution into the air and the water, and that's something that we shouldn't ignore just because it's far away in Canada. But in fact, as you said, it's also, you know, much closer to home, and Maine is unfortunately one of the battlegrounds where the struggle may play out, and that's because this company Enbridge has proposed a couple of years ago to start shipping tar sands oil from Alberta across Canada and ultimately down through Maine to Portland. Currently, there's a pipeline that starts in Portland and flows up to Montreal and out in the other direction, and it brings traditional crude oil into Canada. And what has been proposed is to reverse the flow of oil and start bringing dirtier oil back in the other direction, making Portland potentially the tar sands capital of a port for the East Coast and the United States. And that's enormously concerning because for lots of different reasons, certainly including we just can't afford to continue our dependence on this source of fuel. And what has happened recently is this company in the face of a lot of public pushback and pressure and has tried now to seek approval in bits and pieces. And so this is a company with a track record of oil spills. We can talk about that for a minute. And now of trying to use, tactics to try and evade full review. And they've broken the project into pieces. And so now they're just trying to get permission for one piece of the pipeline in Ontario. And they're seeking a fast-track review that doesn't include the full environmental assessments. So it's unfortunately, oil's not the only thing that's dirty going on here. This is not a company that we should be putting a lot of faith in.
Talk about that track record.
So this company, Enbridge, according to independent sources, between 1999 and 2000 years, 10 years, had 713 oil spills across its territories in Canada and the United States, releasing 133,000 gallons, barrels of oil into the environment. And last year, their pipeline spilled over 800,000 gallons of oil from Canadian tar sands in Michigan, in the Kalamazoo River, a pipeline that is very similar to the pipelines that are being proposed to be used for tar sands in Canada, ruptured and spilled a huge volume of oil into that river. And so that's a disturbing track record. And as I said, it's more disturbing because these older pipelines, these are the same pipelines as that Michigan pipeline. And what you have to keep in mind is that these tar sands are actually more corrosive on pipes and are shipped at higher pressures. And so the pipeline that's been carrying oil from Portland up to Montreal would be subject to even more pressure, and that's very concerning to folks all along the pipeline.
Because originally this pipeline project was proposed, and the companies backed off, citing economic reasons. But now you're saying they're coming back, but perhaps because of the political pressure that it's receiving more and more attention in Canada and the U.S. that they're taking it on piecemeal.
Well, and that's right, and there's some contention over that, but they've labeled this project as phase one, so it's pretty easy to see where this is headed, and it's very clear. And the Keystone pipeline that's proposed out in the Midwest and has drawn all the protests in Washington, it's just further evidence that it's very clear that there's all of this landlocked tar sands oil in Alberta that they need to get somewhere. And the United States, with our appetite for oil being what it is the place to bring that oil.
And your organization, the Natural Resources Council of Maine, is joined with four other environmental groups, including the Vermont Natural Resources Council, Environment Defense of Canada, and the Pembina Institute and Equiterre, to the Canadian government not grant a fast-track permit. Can you talk about this letter?
Yeah, that's right. We these concerns not just end with the groups that have signed this particular letter. Mm-hmm. There's as the protests demonstrate, there is an enormous amount of environmental groups and civic groups and public health groups and regular citizen activists that are very concerned about these projects. But we did feel that it was important for us to weigh in because of the potential impacts of future phases of this project for Maine, and then that Maine has an interest in ourselves in shifting to cleaner sources of energy and and that our increasing our dependence on tar sands is not good, and it needs to be part of what's evaluated. And we don't think it's right for the project to try and get the pieces approved without the full picture being examined. And I think that's our concern.
Would anybody in Maine need to approve this pipeline reversal?
Well, that's a good question, and I think something that's still being examined a little bit. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of review that would happen, and that's because the pipeline exists, and what they're seeking is permission to reverse the flow. So it looks like someone could say, well, that's just a simple matter. We just want to reverse the flow. And it's not clear that there's a whole lot of other permitting involved for Maine, but it's a step that has big repercussions. So it may be up to the Canadian government to intervene in stopping this larger transition from happening.
So in closing, can you say where you're at as a Maine organization and as you understand the position of other Mainers could be if they are concerned with this project, and anything else in closing about the impacts of oil tar sands extraction?
Well, getting back to where we started about this larger struggle about our oil, this session, the Maine legislature passed a bill to reduce our dependence on oil and set some goals and try and have some more plans for doing that. Unfortunately, it was a bill that the governor refused to sign. It became law without a signature. But it's very disturbing that there are folks in Maine and broader, national oil interests who don't want to see us reduce our dependence on oil. And one of the things that the Northeast has been doing specifically is to try and work on a clean fuel standard. And this would be something that the Northeast states could do together to set standards that would for oil and or for fuels for transportation. And of course, our transportation system is almost entirely dependent on oil and gas and diesel, and shift towards some small but important degree towards cleaner fuels, including natural gas or fuels that we can actually produce here in Maine, electricity from renewables or potentially advanced biofuels that are going to be cleaner and ultimately better for our economy in the long run. And the oil industry is moving aggressively across the Northeast and maybe in Maine to try and block that from happening. So I think it's important that folks continue to talk with their elected officials about the seriousness of our oil dependence problem and that our solutions need to be as serious as the problem.
We thank you very much for joining us today, Dylan Voorhis with the Natural Resources Council of Maine.
Thanks a lot.
Though time prohibited discussion on the topic, we wanted to note the development on the topic of radioactive for the last 2 weeks. That was the U.S. EPA's attempt to strengthen ozone standards to match the recommendation of department scientists. The Obama administration's decision last Friday to block that move under pressure from industry organizations arguing that the standards would harm the economy is said by organizers of the tar sands action to have increased participation in that massive civil disobedience. You've been listening to Radioactive, a weekly grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. You can contact us here at news@weru.org. Because of technical difficulties, we are not archiving at this time.